morning, and I'm happy to announce Hannes Kasparik from the University of Applied Science in Hagenberg. He'll give us a talk about Xamba as a PDC and BDC with OpenLDAP. Welcome.
Okay, I'd like to welcome you too to my talk about Xamba and OpenLDAP. I'm not a developer, I'm just an end user, I'm an administrator, so you get the point of view from end user. I'd like to say a few words about myself. I'm a student at the University of Applied Sciences. I study secure information systems, so security is my point. I'm the student of the Hagenberger Kreis. It's a student society which deals with IT security. And my current project is a master thesis about data loss prevention. So this is the big picture we're talking about today. We have Linux clients, we have Windows clients, and we have authentication servers with Xamba and OpenLDAP. These servers are redundant so that they are reliable and that you can build a reliable infrastructure through this. So a few words about LDAP. You might know many things about it, but just basic things. LDAP is a directory service, like the DNS or the Active Directory. You have a database. All this data is stored in objects. The objects are stored hierarchical, so there is a tree. You will see it on the next slide, the tree view. The data itself is saved in objects. And you can define attributes for all these objects. If you need special attributes, let's say telephone numbers for your users or workplaces, everything, you can define everything in LDAP. And the naming is by distinguished names. In DNS, you might have host.domain.top-level-domain. In LDAP, it's a little bit different. You have DC equals host, comma DC equals domain, comma DC equals top-level domain. So this is not very complicated. There are a few things about notation. You will see the organizational units, OU, the domain components, and the C and the common name. So here we have a comparison between a relational database and an LDAP tree. As you can see here, we have the tree view. We have our root, and we have branches, and we have leaves. And in a relational database like MySQL or Oracle, you have tables with rows and columns, and they're in relation to each other, and all these things. LDAP trees are optimized for read access, so that they're very fast when you read things, but they're not very fast when you try to change things. So this is okay, because you won't have very many changes in your LDAP directory, only when you add users or you change your passwords and all these things. But normally, you will only read things. So this is the order I try to build the things in the first picture. At first, I designed the LDAP structure for the environment. The next step is to set up the OpenLDAP server for Linux authentication. After that, we can set up the Xamba domain controller, the primary domain controller with LDAP authentication. After that, we are already done, but we need more reliable access, so we build up a secondary LDAP server and also a backup domain controller for the Xamba domain. If we need more security, of course we need more security, we encrypt everything. So the first picture is the LDAP structure. I would recommend you to keep it as simple as possible. If you have, let's say, 100 clients, this structure might be okay for you. You could also design your LDAP directory like you have your company with different departments and all these things, but I would recommend to keep it as simple as possible. We have three basic organizational units, the organizational units for users, groups, and for computers. The computers are needed for all the Windows computers. They have to be in the directory. We have our base domain name. It's testdomain.local. This domain name of the Xamba of the LDAP domain has nothing to do with your DNS domain or your Xamba domain. It's completely independent, but it makes sense to have an equal one. And we have our root user for the LDAP directory. He is named admin, but you can also name him how you want to have him. So this is the first thing we're going to do. We built an LDAP server with Samba. We have a Windows client who authenticates against the Samba daemon, and we have Linux clients who authenticate against the LDAP daemon. We'll do this in four steps. So the first step is to install the LDAP server. You can download LDAP from openldap.org, recompile, compile it yourself, but I wouldn't recommend this because there are very many options. You might run into library problems and all these things. So if possible, just use a package of your distribution. The current version is 2.4, but older versions are also no problem with Samba. So the installation is not very complicated. In Debian, you just install the package slapd and LDAP utils. Of course, they can differ in your distribution. You might be asked which LDAP version to use. The current version is LDAP version 3, so we use it. To configure the things, it's not very much to do. You just set the suffix, so this is the domain name of our LDAP.
And configure the log level. The last thing, which is very important, is to add the samba.g. It configures the attributes which can be used in the LDAP, so this is very important for our Windows clients. Here you can see the change in the slapd.conf. We have our test domain for the suffix. We have our root user. I told you it would be admin. And we have the root password. The password is an SHA hash, so nobody can read the original password. And it's generated with slap admin. One word on the log levels. It isn't that way that you raise the log level. The higher that you do it, the more information you get. You should read the markage to see which log level is right for you, because you cannot say the higher the better. I used 256 as log level, which worked fine for me, which should be okay for most cases when testing. After the testing phase is over, just switch it to 0 or lower level.
You shouldn't allow the user to write to their password, their must change, or their last set. That would be a security flaw. The system should be able to write to those, but the by self write is incorrect. Because otherwise, the user could set their password if they've authenticated on a connection, but not do a password change. And likewise, they could fiddle when they must change their password or the last set.
You can do it on the console with the LDAP utils like LDAP search and all these things. There are graphical tools like the GQ. It's a pretty old program, but it works.
When it doesn't steal your mouse.
What do you mean?
Sorry, I was just joking that the GQ has a reputation for stealing your mouse. When it crashes, and it does, it will often prevent you from using your desktop, and you end up having to go in some other way into your computer to kill it off before you have use of your computer again.
Okay. I have to say that I just used it for a few testing purposes, and normally I use Windows with this LDAP browser. It's in Java written, so I did it that intensively with GPU. And a friend of mine told me, if you're a fan of BI, use LDAP BI. There is a
So here we have some examples of using them. Just add a user with the SMP LDAP user add, set a password for it, or change the latest logon date possible with Linux. We have the shadow expire here. There's also an option to set up the validity date for Windows logins. As a result, we can have a tree like this. We have our users organization, or we have our groups, we have our computers. And as you can see here, we have the user IDs in Linux. We have the Samba user IDs, which are very much longer. We have home directories. We have everything we need for Windows and for Linux. We have password here. And most things are in clear text. You can just edit them with LDAP tools. Only the passwords are hashed, so you should change them with special tools, not just editing somewhere here. So let's come to step three. To enable a local authentication against the LDAP directory, we will use pluggable authentication modules. The configuration is not very difficult. We install the libnss LDAP and libparm LDAP packages in Debian. Should be a little bit different in other distributions, of course. Configure etcparm.d. You can find the correct things in several how-tos. It's too much for the slides. And change the nssswitch.conf to the settings with LDAP. After that, you should be able to get all the users and groups of your LDAP directory. If it doesn't work, there might be an NSCD running, which caches logins and usernames and all these things. Should be restarted. After that, you should be able to see the created groups and users of the LDAP. So let's come to the final step to integrate Windows into the domain. Windows just needs to know the Win server. You can do it with DHCP, which is very easy, or you can do it also manually. You just choose the advanced TCP/IP options of your LAN adapter, add a Win server, press OK, and you're done. Before you can join a domain, you need a user which has the rights to add a computer into a domain. This could be the administrator or also the root user. But you can also create a new user and give him the rights to add a machine with this command, netrpc rights grant, set the username, see machine account privilege. After that, you should get successfully granted rights, and you're done. And you can use this username with these rights to join the domain. You know this. Just add the domain name you want to join. You get a message to enter your password. You get a welcome message, and you just reboot, and you're into the domain. This should work without no problems. But if you have problems, have a look at the Samba log and LDAP log. And even the Windows event log can help you very much. You can enable it, and you can see very many small things. If something went wrong, you should find the error somewhere. So what we have now is a single server which runs our Samba daemon, our LDAP daemon. We have Windows and Linux clients, and the authentication works without any problems. But what if our server crashes? We only have one server, so we need backup. We need a more reliable environment. If the domain controller is down, Windows 2000 and later might cache the logins. You can configure it in the Active Directory. We don't have it here. But if a user logs on a Windows 2000 and later machine and the domain controller is not available, he even might not notice it because Windows has cached all the logins and the local files. In Windows, we have the NSCD daemon, which can cache also some logins, but yeah, it's not a good idea to rely on these features. If we want to have high availability, it's much more than just having a redundant domain controller. We also need ways for routing, switching, and all these things. We also need a redundant file server, but this is not our today's topic. So when you remember the first picture, now we have our domain controller, we have a file server, we have our clients here, and what we're going to add now is a second Samba server and a second LDAP server. You can add as many LDAP servers you need, but we just add one. So there are two ways to replicate the LDAP data. The traditional way is the slurpd, which is removed in the current version. There you have a master-slave replication. Since LDAP, Open LDAP version 2.2, there is a syncrepl mechanism. And in these older versions, we have slurpd and syncrepl, which has the ability to do master-slave replication too. But in the current version, we can do multi-master replication. So if our master server fails, it might be no problem because we have more master servers, and the users won't get any problems when to change their settings. Because when we have a master-slave replication and the master fails, you cannot do any changes. We can read the LDAP directory, of course, because there is a slave server, but you never can change anything on a slave server. So there are some advantages and disadvantages of this new feature with the multi-master replication. The advantage, of course, is that you have no single point of failure. You can have a lot of master servers. They can be located around the world wherever you need them. We have automatic failover. If one of the server crashes, no problem. The other servers can do everything the first server did. But there are some little problems. Network failures might lead to inconsistencies. This shouldn't happen, but the homepage of LDAP warns of this risk, so I would take a look on this. The thing is, we also need all changes need to be propagated to all master servers. And if you have low bandwidth lines or with high latency, this might be a traffic problem. And to replicate all the things, we need exact time. Because if the network fails somewhere here, the servers need to know which is the current information. So the timing needs to be very precisely on every master server. And there we could get problems with virtualization. As you might know, even VMware and Microsoft, Microsoft doesn't support all domain controllers in a virtual machine. So there should be one machine with correct time where all servers get a correct time. And this is difficult to realize when you have master servers around the world. So there is another solution, the mirror mode. There we have a load balancer in front of our master servers. And this load balancer decides which of these two servers is used. If one of the server fails, let's say this server crashes, the second server is the new master. The load balancer redirects every traffic to the second server. If the first server comes back, they just replicate. So there is no chance that there can be inconsistencies. And this is the big advantage of this. You never can run into inconsistencies because the load balancer redirects every write traffic to only one server. If there's just a network failure, no client can write to this server, and because the load balancer says no, you cannot write there, and even there is no network. So this might be a good solution. And the traditional way, of course, we have a master server, we have a lot of slave servers, and if the master server fails, all clients can read data out of the LDAP directory, but they cannot write to the LDAP directory. So if the master server might be down forever because it's just broken, you propagate one of the slave servers to a master server. After that, you can change all your settings again, and you go on like always. Might add another slave to get more availability. The configuration is pretty simple. You add the module load, add the syncprof module, add the master service. On all your slaves, you add this information. You need a unique sync REPL ID, add the master server, add the interval, and here we add the root user to access the directory. But which is very critical is the clear text password here. So we have to make sure that nobody can read this file. If you do not need high availability, you just say, OK, we need a backup. I think it's very easy to realize this with virtual machines. You just set up your domain controller in a virtual machine. It needs 1 or 2 gigabytes. It's not very big, so you can backup it easily. It's very easy to configure. You do not need all these replication things. And so you just copy these files regularly, and you have a backup of your domain controller. If the domain controller fails, you can boot it up on another machine. So you might have a longer downtime, of course, and you need to fix it manually. But in a small environment where you just say, OK, our server has to run from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., and you do, it's no problem to have a downtime while backing up it in during the night. So this might be also a solution for you. So next step is to create a backup domain controller. At the steps before, we just added more LDAP servers. We also need a secondary Samba server. Samba can act as a backup domain controller in NT4, but of course not in Windows 2000 Active Directories. The configuration is almost the same. We just have a few changes. Of course, it's not the local master. The OS level has to be lower than of the primary server. We are not the domain master. We are not preferred master. And we add our backends